don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello and welcome to the so-called Weaker Podcast, Balls of Ease Weekly GEA Show with me, Mick McCarthy, Gavin Cooney alongside me as always, and the butt of many's foul-mouthed abuse on this podcast, Morris Brosnan joins us. Morris, how are you?
How's the form, lads?
I'm great. I feel that we've got rid of Mark Farrelly. We've sent him off to Italy for a week, and the reason being, we wanted you on to give, you know, your reaction to the horrible and ridiculous and libelous abuse that you've been subject to on this pod over the last few weeks.
I think you deserve to be commended, Mick, for entrusting youths in this championship season. Now that Mark did a decent job, but ultimately your legs ran out and you've seen the error of your ways and gone ahead, like Declan Bonner.
I love the way I'm in charge for some reason, but
you should feel free to libel Farrelly here now. I think it's almost like committing a crime in international waters. If you libel a man on his own podcast, probably can't sue.
Yeah. Mark wouldn't, though, because we won't let him. But yeah, too many weeks in a row for Mark. That's the problem. Morris is going in, injecting a little bit of youth, and we'll see how that gets.
Farrelly also went on holidays for what will probably be Cavan's only championship win.
Yeah.
Against Wicklow.
They beat Wicklow in Fortress Ockram.
Yeah.
Or as it's now renamed.
Oh, what's its name now? Didn't it get a sponsored name? I can't remember it.
It did. Anyway, so Fortress something else.
I was using that line to tease ahead to the fact that we'll have the round one qualifier draw. Round two
round
football
two,
qualifier
round
draw
two. We'll talk
later
about
in the show. And I'll have that, the name of the Wicklow ground for you.
In round two of the qualifiers will be Waterford. The Waterford footballers, long, long thought of as the worst team in football, the worst team to manage. Their manager, Tom McGlinchey, is going to talk to us about how they beat Wexford. You talked to him a little bit earlier, Morris.
I think it's like kind of one of the most underappreciated managerial jobs this year. Like, we're constantly hearing about, you know, elsewhere, but like, they did beat London in the league. They came within a point of beating Cork last year. That went on to lose six players from that team last year and turn around and beat Wexford convincingly, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. So, yeah, actually, that is the main thing about that, is it was convincing. Like, you know, we might talk a little bit about Wexford later on as well. But, like, I mean, that was a team that just went out and won that game. It wasn't a lucky, it wasn't the last kick of the game. It wasn't a kick of the ball between them or red card or anything like that. It was just a team who was better than the other team going out and winning. So, in the Stephen Hunt derby.
And the Waterford footballers have thought of thought so little of in their county that they're allowed to play at home. So where the Waterford hurlers, their home ground is thought not good enough for them. Let's stick the footballers in Friar Field.
We're also today going to talk to Kieran Deely, who's been a guest on the show before. He's the London football manager. London went out to Louth yesterday in the first round of the qualifiers in Royslip. Two games and out for London. It doesn't, as Kieran will talk about and has talked about on Twitter, doesn't really inspire much for the development of the game that you train all year. You go out and you play two games. It's kind of the same every year. And then that's it. We go on. We have the summer without them. We have a summer without these counties. It's kind of what we're here to talk about on this podcast. And just very interested to hear what Kieran Deely has to say about that.
Yeah. And he has also some very interesting views on recovery and whatnot in the GA.
Yeah. So we'll get to these in a couple of minutes, but I was in Thurles yesterday for Clare's mighty comeback win against Tipperary. Not really allowed to talk about that too much right now, but
you can talk from a tip point of view now that they're out of the channel.
Oh, wow.
Out on June 10th.
Yeah.
It's very June early, 10th. Isn't it?
Have to say, there was nothing like being on the pitch in Thurles, in a kind of a, you know, in an acceptable way, not in a kind of a plan B way. There's kids out there like pucking balls after the game and stuff like that. The Clare players getting pictures with things, but what a beautiful pitch.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God. It's like, it's so green and thick and the perfect length, and there wasn't a mark on it.
Okay.
After 70 minutes of hurling, and it was just, the word carpet is thrown around a lot when it comes to nice pitches, but it's as good as I could describe it, I have to say.
Would you move the All-Ireland, maybe not the final, but the semi-finals? Did you have the semi-finals in Thurles?
No. It's a pox of a place to go and watch a match in. The stand seats are so small. You can barely, like, It's just, honestly, you're just any kind of hot weather at all, and you're just pumping sweat, surrounded, battered in.
Good use of battered.
Yeah, it's really not the most comfortable place to watch games.
The optics of a full stadium, though, like to be in Croke Park with 39,000, there was a bit of a dull atmosphere on Sunday. I do think there is something to be said for the aesthetic of a stadium that is full. Like, yeah, Paris.
Well, that's been the best thing about these. It's been the best thing about the championship so far is you see all these grounds on TV.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, you see now anywhere the first
on Saturday night, like for that game. But you were in Croker for with the 39 or 40,000 or whatever that was there. Double what was in Thurles for the double header. We'll talk a bit about the games, but you had an interesting run in.
Oh, I shared a lift with Garda commissioner. A former Garda commissioner, Martin Callanan. He did look very familiar in the lift, and it took me a long time to place the name. And then just before the Longford game, I went to the bathroom and he was coming out and I heard someone go, "Ha, how are you, Martin?" So I was like, Martin Callanan. You see, he's bald. He's quite bald. And you don't realise that because he's usually wearing a hat on TV.
Most people who wear hats 100% of the time are bald. And I'm not sure the cause.
Well, no, but
his hat
was like a duty issue, uniform issue.
Oh, yeah. No, sure. I don't mean that's like I'm saying that like
I don't think he goes around wearing like, snapback. I think it's very much the Garda hat.
I don't think it's to hide the fact that he's bald. I'm saying that he wears it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what do you mean that the hat has slowly eroded the man's hair?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's possibly super damages there.
So anyway, that's the most interesting thing that happened in Croke Park yesterday was that Gavin bumped into a former Garda commissioner.
I'm surprised to see him in a Gaelic match, like to show that much time out of the place with a couple of whistleblowers. I'm very surprised.
Right, moving on. We'll talk about lots more. We'll talk about the qualifier draw, as Gavin mentioned, and we'll look back at... we now know what's going on. We know who's in the Christy Ring Cup Final. We know who's in the Laurie Marr Cup Final. We know who's in the Nicky Rackard Cup Final. And we know who's in the Joe McDonough Cup Final. So we'll talk about all that. But do want to get to this interview with Tom McGlinchey now. So Tom, a first championship win for Waterford since 2011. That's a pretty great day for Waterford football.
Yeah, super day for Waterford football. Absolutely delighted for the players. 7 years is a long time. You know, you often hear about the 7-year itch, but 7 years without a championship win is very long. And great reward for the players, especially the players that are there a long time. I suppose fellas like JJ Hutchinson and Thomas O'Gorman. Stephen Prendergast, Tommy Prendergast, Stephen Enright, you know, without a championship victory, and just to have that, and then for the new players coming in, it's great for them, like, you know, to see this championship win.
Tommy, you mentioned Prendergast and JJ there, but you ran Cork close last year and then lost 6 players. What's the rebuilding process after something like that?
Well, I suppose, look, we were just very unfortunate this year. We said that the players we lost for the Tipperary game, we had a lot of very serious injuries. And just unfortunately, we just got this bad run of injuries. Like Paul White, like was our captain and talisman, got a very severe hip injury. And, he was sent to a few specialists. But just unfortunate, one of these injuries that is just very hard to heal. And I suppose just trying to get him to have a good quality of life and, you know, is more important than trying to even get him to play football. And then just unfortunate with ankle injuries and groin injuries and so forth. And we had one fellow then went back to college. And it was just hard to, you know, it was just a hard blow to take with 6 players going. But having said that, there was new players coming to the final this year. And it was an opportunity for them. And it takes a while for players to bed up into county football. But I have to say the lads have grabbed it with both hands. And, you know, some of them made their debut then last Saturday and they did fantastic and won a championship game, which is great for them.
We described earlier on in the show of being Waterford manager as one of the toughest jobs in the GEA, Waterford football manager. I mean, it's kind of ironic, I suppose, the year that's in it, that you guys are going to be in the championship longer than the Hurlers after the amazing year that they had last year. But I mean, is that like what is the football scene like in Waterford, and how difficult is it to kind of maintain a competitive edge when I suppose hurling is so dominant at most of the clubs?
Well, look, I suppose every job is difficult. I wouldn't say being in charge of the Waterford football is the toughest job. Like sometimes I might say, it could be an easy job because there's little expectation.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
Having said that, you know, I'm lucky that the players that are committed to it and give it the full commitment are fantastic. And I suppose what makes it easy for me is when you go down training and you've got a good setup with, say, your backroom staff and your physios and your strength and conditioning, and I have a great great man in James Cooney and Pat O'Brien, my liaison and team secretary there, you know, and the players are committed. It does make it easy going down. I think because there's a vibrant and healthy club scene down there, and teams like the Nair and Ballinacorty and Strabilly have all performed well at Munster club level. So, you know, so like when you have a group of players, 26 committed players, you know, it's easy. What makes it hard is when you suffer disappointing defeats. Like, you know, we've had a lot of 1-point, 2-point defeats over the last number of years. And I suppose when people look at league tables, and league tables don't lie, they see Waterford down near the bottom. But if you analyse it properly and correctly over the last number of years, I think of the last 3 years in the league games, I think there was 11 games that we lost by 3 points or less, and there was, I think, 3 draws, and there was another 2 or 3 games where we lost by 4 points. So we've always been close, but, you know, close doesn't get you the cigar. So it's just unfortunate, but like it has been enjoyable. And, you know, I suppose that last Saturday, the win against Preston, makes it even more enjoyable, and I suppose, you know, makes it worthwhile.
It's funny, Tom, when we look at this year, you know, we obviously have a new football championship structure with the Super 8s, and yet the stories of the year so far have been the lower counties like Waterford or Carlow or Fermanagh landed upsets. Would you have any sort of apprehensions about the Super 8s being where the GAA are investing their time?
Well, I suppose as a GAA person, and taking off my Waterford hat, I would be worried insofar as that, you know, that if the Super 8s, which they will, there'll be a fantastic competition, they'll be fantastic. I just be worried that, like, that every year then people say, let's get all these qualifiers out of the way, and let's these get provincial matches out of the way, and let's get on with the Super 8. Like, and I suppose I made the point 2 months ago, and it was borne out, like the Joe McDonagh Cup, was saying the hurling has been fantastic and great games in it and very close games, but like not one second of coverage anywhere on it. And, you know, very little media, I would say, print on it. And you will get a bit, I suppose, before the final and in the Leinster final. And that's what I'm afraid is going to happen, I think, with, you know, maybe a second-tier competition or even with the championship the way it is now. Like, you know, that, you know, people are just going to say, let's get on with the Super 8s. And, you know, that would be a worry for the GAA. And I could see that happening, like, you know, and, you know, you'd be something to do that the GAA probably want to be worried about. But I think not just the GAA, but county boards and team officials and club officials, everyone that has an interest in the GAA should be mindful of it.
So would you be against the tiered system in football?
Well, it seems very hard. I suppose it'd be very easy to come out and say, oh God, no, let's not have a tiered system because of our great win last Saturday. And like to be hypocritical of me to say something like that, maybe, but I'd be worried insofar as that, and people are saying, look, have it done properly and they can play before other matches and, you know, or play before tier one competitions. But I just be afraid that, like, you know, like, as I said, you have the Joe McDonagh Cup, they're a fantastic competition, a tier two competition. And as I said, like, no one has seen 1 second of it. I haven't anyway, and I have a GAA follower. Like, it hasn't been on any television program that I watch. Like, you know, and I don't know, has anyone ever, only people that be at the matches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be afraid that that's what would happen. Like, I mean, you take even what happened, and again, I'm talking about the Joe McDonagh Cup. Like, Antrim now are in a relegation playoff. We'll say with the Christy Ring Cup runners up. Like, you know, but like, does the general public know about that, or does the general public care about it? And that's what I'd be afraid of, what would happen if a tier two competition came in. So do we need to have a proper think about the way the league and championship is done? Definitely, but we're not going to solve it, lads, over a 3-minute conversation here, because what I say might be a soundbite now and someone else will come out with a soundbite next week. And over the last number of years, that's all we've been hearing is soundbites, but we haven't got anything substantial. And the only thing that's changed now is these Super 8s. But again, is that for the betterment of the GAA? I wonder.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of focus on the positive here. So, and go back to last week's win. What is the, you know, the desired impact of a win like that within the county? Like, would you hope to drum up some excitement ahead of this? We saw you in the qualifiers, you drew Monaghan. Is the hope that you'd kind of drum up some support within the county now?
Yeah, and look, again, we're if you're realistic as well, like we're still the number two sport as regards to, like, Hurling Cork is going to be number one, like, and in fairness to the players involved and the supporters are involved and us, the backroom, they're involved, we're aware of that. And you only gather support and garner support when you start winning things. And the same thing happened. I was involved in Tipperary, like, when we got to Munster final back in 2002, and we played Donegal in the qualifiers, and it was great. And the same thing Tipperary is in Waterford. There's a great loyal band of supporters, but where hurling, or whether it's football or hurling, whatever's the dominant sport, the other sport would find it hard to break through. And you even see it in a huge county like Cork, where, you know, hurling and football are, you know, perceived to give an equal status, but the hurlers get all the support. So it's always hard to break through. But for the team that were involved last Sunday, and for the supporters, and for us in the back room, last Saturday is huge, absolutely huge. Like, people, I suppose it's very hard to describe that 5 minutes after you win a championship game. Like, but when you have won, when you win a championship game that you haven't won in 7 years, it was sevenfold the excitement afterwards. Like, and that just 3 or 4 minutes of total euphoria afterwards was absolutely fantastic. And I just suppose it makes all them, you know, the old GA cliches that everyone shows up, but it makes all them hard nights in January, February, March all worthwhile. Like, you know, it really does, because it's what we're hoping to do is that the new players that came into the scene this year, like, you know, that they will instill that confidence and that, you know, that love they have for the football, and it might inspire other people to come in and join the frame next year.
Yeah, like, just on that, on the euphoria after the game, I was delighted to see you say that, like, you know, you're not going to be worrying about drinking bans or media bans or anything like that. Would it annoy you, like, as someone that's involved in that the teams that do have success, or even sometimes the teams that have the sniff of success, maybe, that they just seem to take it too seriously and can't enjoy what they're there for, you know? And that's something that obviously you're saying, look, we had this win, that's what it's all about, that's what we're here for, you know?
Yeah, well, look, a lot of that, what I said, was tongue-in-cheek as well, because I think, no, maybe I'm wrong, but I'd say a lot of counties, a lot of players enjoy the aftermath of a championship win. Now, look, again, I could be proven wrong. Maybe there are teams that don't enjoy it, and I don't know how you couldn't enjoy it after a match. But, you know, like, the lads work so hard, and ask any player that I've ever been involved with, and especially the Waterford team the last couple of years, I've never once mentioned that, you know, you can't drink this week, you can't drink next week. These lads work so hard themselves. They actually work so hard themselves, and they're so, I suppose, into their fitness and their nutrition and their strength and conditioning, and they want to be on the first team, that they're not going to throw it away by, you know, going on a Sky for a weekend and going on a session, like, you know. And, you know, fellas have weddings or whatever coming up. They will tell you, and they tell you in advance, and they go to it. And, like, you know that they're not going to abuse their body. Like, you know, like, I mean, if they're going to have a few pints, they're going to have a few pints. And, you know, the following day, they'll do something to rectify what, you know, the few pints they've had. Like, you know, so, I was asked the question last Saturday, what am I going to do tonight? And that's what I meant. I said, like, will there be no drink ban in it? We'll enjoy ourselves. But, and the lads did enjoy themselves. But they enjoyed it in a way that, you know, when they woke up Sunday morning, they still had the euphoria of remembering the victory they had the night before. And that was important.
We saw today the draw you got in the qualifiers. It's a tough one with Monaghan, but at least you're at home. What would your realistic ambition be for that game?
Is Monaghan the only team to beat Dublin this year, I think, I suppose of all the teams you could have got, it's the hardest. But again, as I said to someone else today, I suppose every other team probably wanted to get Waterford, because we, even though we'd won the weekend, we still be perceived as probably the weaker team on the side of the draw. So it's going to be hard. Like, you know, I suppose you're looking for, again, respectability. Like, you know, you want to build on what has happened last Saturday. And I suppose the difference with this game now against Monaghan and previous years and previous games, that we're actually going into the Monaghan game now with a victory under our belt, which has never happened before. So, you know, we'll see now. Tonight's Monday and we're going training tonight, and we'll see how the bodies are. But you just hope that the boys can express themselves again. And it's a home venue, and, like, it's been well publicised, like, the hurlers were unfortunate not to have any home match this year in two of their championship games. So, you know, it's a home game, it's a home championship game, and maybe the Waterford supporters will come out and support us, and it'll be fantastic for the supporters there to see a Division 1 team in action, but to definitely give our players a lift as well.
Well, listen, Tom, best of luck against Monaghan and with the rest of the year, and congratulations again on the big win at the weekend.
I appreciate it, lads. It's great to get the publicity and support, like, because I suppose, and that's what you're doing, and it's fantastic to have that, so, as you say, the so-called weaker counties, because you know, that, like they, everyone needs that bit of publicity, and it was great for the lads, and hopefully they can do themselves proud on the 23rd. Thanks very much.
Hopefully. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, you were fucked over the line twice. Fucked over the line like you catch a fucking loaf of bread and fucked you over the line with his shorts up. And what that does is it lifts the opposition. We don't want to see no Westmeath man fucked about. Is that clear now, Alan? No more.
Tom McGlinchey there, Waterford manager. That's one of the more interesting stories of the year, as you were talking about, Morris. But what about Wexford, right? 10 years ago, Wexford were in an All-Ireland semi-final. Like, they were the coming team in Leinster football. And now they're losing to Waterford in the first round of the qualifiers, having lost to... Who did they lose to? They lost to Carlow last year. They lost to Leash.
They were in the mile up at half time.
Yeah. So... I don't know. It just, they got relegated from Division 3, playing Division 4 football next year. Like, it just, things have just gone completely to the dogs in the space of just 10 years. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Like, naturally, when Davy Fitz goes in and manages your hurlers, that takes a lot of eyeballs.
But they got Banty in the same year, you know?
I suppose. Yeah. He was gone almost immediately. Yeah. Like, I don't know, to be honest. I think it's something that we should definitely dig into.
Again, we've heard stuff about squad turnover, which is just an all too familiar tale. Just can't hold on to players year by year. Mm. Also, I don't think you can, looking at the brief highlights we saw yesterday, you can't underestimate the absence of Jim Rossiter, who tore a screw sheet against Leash at fullback. That definitely hurt them. Like, I mean, they had a goal probably unfairly disallowed with the square ball. Like, I just think they were beaten by a better team. There's definitely a wider issue there, but I wouldn't overstress that this is a shock result. Like, I think, as I said, Waterford did beat London in the league. Came very close to beating Carlow in the league. I think that was 2 points. So, you know, there's something to be said for what McGlinchey is doing there as well. There's obviously a wider issue in Wexford.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the issue is that it wasn't really... Well, it was a shock result in one sense, but as you said, it's not like they were better beaten. They were the better team in the loss, and I think that's the nub of the issue.
Yeah. They need to bring Manny Ford back, I think, you know?
I think,
a few points.
Yeah.
What about your day at Croker then? Carlo, we haven't mentioned him yet. You know, like, we're half an hour into the show. They've been our darlings for the year. You actually watched them in person. They lost by 4 points to Leash. It could have, like, there's arguments to say that game could have went either way and Carlo could have taken their goal chances, but
yeah,
the style of football, were you converted?
I wasn't bored by it. Like, the atmosphere was pretty good, actually. I was in the Hogan Stand among... And there was actually a very good Leash crowd. Like, we knew there'd be a big crowd from Carlow, but there was at least as many from Leash, I'd imagine. So it was quite a good atmosphere, really. I was in the lower Hogan Stand. There was quite a good atmosphere there. I wasn't as bored by Carlow's tactics, really, as others, because it was any time they ran directly at Leash, they caused a bit of trouble. Mm. Jordan Morrissey, I think that's his full name. He's really good. Brilliant. He's a really exciting player, and he was quite good. It's just, Carlo, I don't have as many talented players as Leash. It just comes down to that. And if Carlo were going to win, everything had to go perfectly for them. And Paul Broderick missed early in the second half a sitter of a free. I think it was on the 21-metre line, just slightly to the right in front of Hill 16, and he pulled it wide. There's another couple of bad misses. They had a bit of a purple patch in that third quarter, but just didn't take their chances. At times, while their style of play is obviously very regimented and it's probably necessary and it's brought them this far, at times they were almost too loyal to it. When the game needed chasing, it wasn't that they left loads of players back, because you could see there was a plan in the last 5 or 10 minutes to push people on. So they essentially went man for man then in their own defence. They left 2 or 3 people back for the last 5 minutes or so. But like, their plan to get the ball, when they have a couple of powerful runners in Jordan Morrissey and Sean Murphy, others less so. So you got their number 9, whose name escapes me now, in midfield. He'd get the ball and he'd immediately turn, waiting for a runner off his shoulder. So it's a very structured attack in that sense.
Yeah.
But when Carlo pushed people on, that didn't really work. So, and Leisha dropped players back. So right, this Carlo number 9 had loads of space in front of him to attack, but was still turning around out of instinct and habit. So they need... Sometimes it's just a little bit too rigid and regimented for them. But ultimately, Leash were deserving winners. And Carlo, I know Sean Gannon admitted after the game that the performance wasn't what it should have been from Carlo.
Well, doesn't that move on, though? I mean, like, we have mentioned this before, but I felt that there was a little bit of almost vitriol and told you so about them losing the game to, like, a team that's beaten them 3 times. Like, there's an argument that Leash are a better team than Carlo, and Carlo didn't go out and disgrace themselves, but it's like, because they're not winning a Leinster title, that it's somehow seen as, look, this system, it only brings you so far. It's like, maybe it only brings you so far because they've only got the players that Carlo have, you know? Yeah. And I don't just blindly defend what you could describe as negative football or you know, negative tactics, because I think there is probably more to the game than just, you know, trying to win. But like, there is... Some of the reaction has really annoyed me.
There's a strain of the reaction that really pisses me off about Turlough O'Brien and Stephen Poacher in particular, that there's this idea that these guys are self-promoters at the expense of the players and so on. I mean, I cannot... Like, so much of GAA media is taken up by moaning about the fact that no one is available and no one is different and there's no access. And these guys have thrown the doors open to whoever's interested. And they've been all the better for it. And yeah, so has the coverage in the media. So... And then the idea that, oh, you know, John Suger, he's done a great job. He's kept his head down, not like these self-promoters in Carlo. Like, who cares?
None of it's anything to do with it. Like,
yeah, is there not...
There's
a very
weird, begrudging tone to it.
I think there's... Because the middle ground that's been totally missed. Like, there's a... I was at that game as well. And, you can't flaw a defensive system. Like, the defensive system in itself is not a bad thing. But it's... As you kind of point out, like, en route is that midfielder. That was a deliberate tactic. He had runners coming off his back, so he gets the ball and he passed off to somebody rushing off his shoulder. But oftentimes, if he was not adhering to that deliberate tactic, like, it was a bit of, you know, self-individualism, he could carry the ball on himself. And that train across him, like, it's okay to play a defensive system. I'm totally fine with that. But you can still critique their style, because I still think they could have beaten Leash. Like, they have definitely the potential. There's no reason why Paul Broderick, who is a genuinely top class forward, should be back in your half back line tracking back. Like, you have to be able to manipulate, or at least him say, I'm not going to track this run. Like, I'm not going to stick the system to stay up front because I am a genuinely top class forward. Like, Daniel St-Ledger got a free on the 45 for Carlo, and for whatever reason, and again, it's a ploy, he put the ball on the ground on his own 45 and launched it, and they lost the ball just in the general direction of their forwards. Robbie Molloy's kickouts were, for the first 25 minutes, were terrible, and eventually I was in the hill. So I could see Stephen Poacher leave, come across and tell him, now you have to start kicking short. Why does it take Poacher to do that? Like, why can't they? I think it's fair enough to critique those kind of elements, which are, you know, it's just like a really small kind of me taking on myself, okay, these kickouts aren't working, so I'm going to go short, or this tactic of a launch ball long isn't working, so I'm going to carry.
Yeah. Like, I would agree with you. Carlo, they're missing that slightly off the cuff. That ability to play off the cuff and respond to a situation. They're not a side set up to chase a game in the last five or ten minutes. Yeah. And things needed to go perfectly for them, and they didn't. Whereas, and we probably haven't given Leash enough credit here, whereas in Carlo against Kildare, kicked, what was it, 214? I think it was only 5 or 6 points from play. Like, a load of them were very soft frees that Kildare gave away. Leash were meaner in a sense. They didn't give away as many soft frees, whereas Carlo did give some really silly frees away, especially in the second half. So, I completely agree with you on Carlo. Not quite. I think... So I'm kind of agreeing with you both here, and it probably doesn't make for great radio.
No, you see, Morris's point about the legitimate critique is a very valid one, a very good one, because that is actually maybe where I'm getting almost too defensive about it, because I feel that there's a bit of kind of vitriol and just real kind of meanness in some of the things that have been said, and then maybe turn a blind eye to the fact that you can actually have this conversation about how Carlo could have won this game. That's fair enough. That is based on the game that evolved in front of us, you know, and isn't just... The problem is there's preconceived ideas out there that the game can only be played in one way, and if you win, you win in spite of it. If you lose, you lose because of it.
Yeah.
And that's an issue that I have, that's just in general analysis of football as a whole, you know. What Carlo have to look and do and say is, here's how we could have won this game. How do we evolve this system? It's the system that's got them this far, and now they have to say, right, well, we need to get to the next level, because there's no point in getting to a level and staying at it. But they have. You can't say that they haven't made massive progress this year, and they have another chance now. It's against Tyrone. They got a horrible draw in the qualifiers, but fine, they have another chance to do it next week, and then they go out the following year and say, right, well, this is where we are now. We're in Division 3. We got to a Leinster semi-final. We beat Kildare. We need the next level now. You know, you don't need to do it all in one go either. You know what I mean? It's almost unreasonable to think that they will just jump from, you know, nowhere to the very, very elite all of a sudden. You know, I feel like there's almost a little bit of, and again, it's probably not too many people, but there's almost a little bit of, yeah, I don't like watching them play. I don't care that they're a small county. I'm just going to ignore that part and talk only about the fact that they play horrible football, so I'm glad they're beaten.
Yeah, but the same cohort will look at other counties going away on training camps. You know, like, Carlo didn't go away on training camp before the Kildare game because they had a lot of students, so they couldn't afford to miss study time for exams. Other counties did do that. They put their players away on training camps abroad when these are into exams. They're ignoring the fact that they're so open with the media. They're ignoring the fact that they're allowing the players to have, you know, celebrate their victories as well. Like, in so many ways, Carlo are really good for football. Really, really good for football.
Yeah.
So they've also...
Exactly.
When we're told that football is dying, it's the likes of Waterford and Carlo who are the perfect response to that. That, you know, if it is dying, then these underdog stories are one hell of a way to do it.
Yeah.
So the only flaw is within that, is that kind of, you know, regimen. Like, to the same extent, you're kind of looking at what Leash did, if we could talk about that for a small bit. Like,
yeah.
Leash were way more patient, so we're building up. They had two players inside, which was Kingston and Ross Munley. Eventually, Ross Munley was just tired, because when you're inside like that, it takes a lot of work. So they brought on Evan O'Carroll, and straight, like, that was the perfect substitution. Evan O'Carroll was straight away out in front. The first thing he did was in a free, the one of Kings kicked it over, and that was during, you mentioned that purple patch. O'Carroll were within a point, yeah, before O'Carroll won that free. He did the same thing later. He actually kicked the point at the end. But, you know, those kind of small, and like, I think John Suger really set Leash up brilliantly in this game. But, and it's just kind of trying to, within Carlo's very, very successful game plan for them, is just small little elements that they could tweak, which would have allowed them to win the game, I think.
Yeah. No, but it comes back to just the fact that they don't have as many good players as Leash.
Yeah.
The margins for success are narrowed and everything had to go perfect, and it didn't. And a lot of that is attributed to Leash. They didn't foul, yeah, they didn't give away soft frees. Sorry, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'd like to talk a little bit more about Leash. Should mention, actually, that Evan O'Carroll and Morris mentioned there, his father died during the week and he came on off the bench and scored that point. And it's just one of those, you know, incredibly sad and poignant GA moments that you kind of get every now and then.
And it was very, very obvious that it was within the squad. The second he scored the last point of the game, he kicked it, and straight away he was embraced by his Leash teammates. Like, it was very, very obvious that this was something they were very conscious of. Which,
yeah,
I
thought, and just like that, that's just always just one of those things. It's just great to see in the GA. But
an equally great thing to see in the GA is the reaction among the crowd when the Leash goalkeeper forays forward. I mean, Graham, yeah, Brody, you obviously you have become a kind of a Graham Brody laureate.
Yeah,
the world's only Graham Brody laureate, I'm sure. Yeah, one of
Graham
kind.
Brody's ma is here swearing it. You know,
I mean, I wrote a piece on this before, and I hopefully will do so again on this kind of trend of fly goalkeepers. So the classic example is Kerry Cork in the league. Cluxton is sick of what he's seeing, gets the ball and marches up into the Kerry half. But I mean, that, and that happens a lot. Rory Beggan does it as well. So that's what happens there, is goalkeeper gets the ball and runs straight out, gives a pass off and runs straight back. That is not what Graham Brody does. Graham Brody is a 16th man in terms of he's swapping places with the fullback. If he goes up forward and pass off the ball, he's not immediately retreating. He's looking for the ball again. There's no element of him coming back. Even when... So essentially the way the game would play out, Leash would hold the ball in the 45, Carlo would set up very, very rigid there, Brody would be on his line, and he'd come out and he'd be talking to anybody who's very close to him. So he's like a literal quarterback in terms of he's making calls here, he's coming out. So the element of his game is not run straight out, run straight back, it's I'm coming on the ball. And the reason he's doing that is because he's well able. He plays as half forward for Port Leash already. He's an outfield player. He doesn't use a tee ever for his kickouts. So it's not... Goalkeeper runs out because he's got open space in front of it. Player carries on the ball to try and create a 2v1 overlap. It's another element to that. It's almost going beyond just a fly goalkeeper. It's actually a 16th man.
Yeah.
And the only people who don't, as you mentioned, like the whole stadium is like, what's the goalkeeper doing?
Panic.
Where's,
yeah,
he going?
Just,
the only players who
this.
Don't seem to panic is the Leash players. Their fullback just holds his ground. It's very, you know, John Suger had said before, oh, it's kind of instinctive. It's not. This is definitely organised.
Yeah.
It's definitely very well planned.
I think so.
And so, at one stage,
he might be calling when he does it,
yeah,
but they know he's doing it.
Well,
yeah.
Definitely. So Brody will come out. He'll lose the ball. The ball will be turned over. And there's just no panic. All he sees is the fullback drop back.
He's not bothered about getting back, is he?
No,
he's in the second half where he lost it. And he stayed dawdling around the 45 for about 2 minutes.
Why that works.
I just kind of admire it.
Yeah. Why that works, though, is because when you've only got two forwards ahead, if Leash had three in their full back line, So for example, Morris, the fullback, would just drop back into goals, and there's no man free. There's still everyone's marked up, and Brody's out there. And so instead of Brody just generating man on their back, Brody's out there trying to tackle or trying to stay involved in the game. So he's making an impact beyond just, I'm going to run forward here and have like a brief saunter. So like I read some match were saying the game was so pedestrian that Brody just decided to run forward. No, it's not. He's done this in the league final.
Yeah.
He did this. We didn't come to highlighted it the last time on Sunday game. It's a deliberate tactic.
Yeah.
So wait and we see it now in against the Dubs. And
I can't
house.
Wait to see what the Dubs do. Like, I mean, do you think they'll push someone up now? Because Longford's kickouts in the first half against Dublin, imagine the kickouts in the first 15, 20 minutes. Like, we had a lot of them now early on. And they could be divided into the ones that went long were won by Dublin. And the ones that went short were won by Longford. And then eventually Dublin just put up a man, I think it was Niall Scully or someone, press right up and then just kind of took three steps to his right and cut off the ball in the middle. So like they know how to adapt and know how to push up on opposition kickouts. So I'm really interested as to what they'll do.
Yeah.
Because like to be pushing very aggressively up, I have to say, if they're going to stop Brody's kickouts, because he's only tapping it the minimum distance required just to get it back again.
Yeah, so that's often what he does. He's tapping it to a cornerback just to get the ball back, and then he'll carry it on and the fullback will come with him. So you've got a 2v1 overlap. The thing that you have to do with Brody that eventually carried it when he actually got fouled by Murphy is mark him. When he comes out the field, you have to stick a man on him and you have to stay with him. So he has to be treated like an outfield player, because it's not a brief saunter forward. Like, you can't just watch him come out the ball and know he's going to give it off and go back, because he's not. If you let him, he'll carry it forward and he'll score. I'm convinced that if we keep watching this Leash team, Graham Brody's going to score from play.
Yeah.
I would
expect him to, actually, because I mean, Began has done that. And, you know, as you said, this is actually
and he's
more
beyond
of an
that,
organized.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, one final word on Leash. Can we wish a very speedy recovery to Stephen Attroyd, the Leash captain? Got horrendous. He's got fractured his skull in two places. He went with Carlo on the attack when the game, I think it was still 3 points in it, so it was still in the melting pot. I think it was 72, 73 minutes on the clock. A Carlo guy spilled the ball and then he dived to ground to get it as a Carlo guy drew his boot on it. It was a really horrible injury. He was down for about 5 minutes, so got a nasty injury. So I just wish him as speedy recovery as possible.
It's horrible to see. Just very, very briefly, got back to Brody, actually. We don't even have to talk about this, but just the thing that I'm most interested in seeing is something going wrong. And look, I know that Leash probably know that's going to happen and they're fine with it. It's the cost of doing business. But the crowd
reaction
is what's going to be the interesting thing there, because GEA people are very slow to adapt. I'm still going to hurling matches every week where people are just saying, let it in, te fuck, you know, and no matter what the situation is, even when it's the worst thing you could do, and nobody ever changes. And when something goes wrong on this, that's all they'll remember forever. They won't remember the rest of the scores that come. They won't remember the amount of scores he sets up, the amount of scores he even gets himself, as you said, which is probably inevitable. They'll only remember the time the Dublin scored a goal in the Leinster final, and that was the end of it.
But I will counter with, I had some very sophisticated GAA fans around me from Carlo who were roaring at the referee that he swallowed his black card. So, because there were a couple of black card incidents in the first half that he didn't give. So that's a new, if possibly fatal, twist in an old classic.
My experience yesterday, sorry to bring it back to myself again, it's like, because I can't really talk about the match, but we can talk about our experiences at the game, was, as usual, you would have your kind of sense of possibly, like, you know, shouting at the game, and generally it's positive, and generally it's go on, well done, and whatever, and every now and then you'll be calling for a free.
Every now and
as
again.
As in, every single time there's a collision of any kind, and once or twice you'll lose it, and then the other time you'd be just kind of chancing your arm saying, that was a push in the back, that was a push. And look, everybody's doing it, and I'm mainly surrounded by Tipperary fans. There's one guy in front of me, and I felt quite sorry for him, because he was there with his young son on one side and his kind of maybe teenage daughter on the other side, and it's just the three of them. And he's there to the point where I knew I was annoying him, but I kind of wasn't. I was very into the game. I wasn't really too considering, like, I wasn't, again, not being abusive or not being cursing or anything, but I was calling for frees and stuff all the time and giving out about tip frees. And it got to the point where every time I opened my mouth, I could see him just looking over his shoulder and then stopping. Big angry head, stopping, looking straight ahead again. And obviously, I'd made this decision that once I stop, I won't be stopped. Once I start, I won't be stopped. And I felt quite sorry for him because he was there with his guy. He was being a responsible father, and I applaud him for it. But yeah, my God, he wanted to shout in my face. He really, really did.
I saw you moaning about the fact there was no one around town in Thurles before the game.
Very empty, but there wasn't.
But like
too
four
bad
weekends
there,
in a row.
You know?
Like, I mean, we talk about fatigue for the Tip players. You can't have Tip fans in the booth 4 weeks in a row. The tells.
I was in the square, and there was nobody. First time I've ever seen it. There was nobody selling. They were down closer to the ground, but the first time I've ever been in the square, and they weren't selling like headbands and cowboy hats and sunglasses. Never seen anybody buy a cowboy hat, but they're for sale at every GAA match.
Yeah, maybe there's a level of fatigue that sets in with the round robin, even with them. A study worth doing.
Or they've more games to be going to, because they're not locals, you know, who do them. So maybe they have to pick and choose. Now. Maybe they were all in Limerick yesterday.
The cowboy hat is definitely an option for Callaghan now that he can't wear his red hat games.
Wear a pink cowboy hat to Crow Park. On that note, we'll wrap up Crow Park. Actually, do you know what? We never talked to you about Longford. Were you disappointed?
Well, there's no need. Look, I mean,
they kept
like
what,
some,
did they lose
some of
the
us. Some of us could say that we were horsed by the referee. I mean, Dublin. In fairness, the loophole is there to be exploited. The GA thing is to congratulate them on exploiting the loophole rather than rising above it. They didn't make seven subs. Yeah. Now, someone on our Facebook made the point that if the GA rang the Longford County Board to tell them they got a replay, Longford wouldn't answer their phone, which would be fair enough. Look, I mean, Longford are always going to be up against it. James Givney's red card was absolutely the right decision. It was an awful tackle. And that made it harder. But look, Longford stuck into the Dubs relatively well in the second half. You laughed at me earlier on, you scoffed, but I think it's an achievement that they did only lose the second half by 7 points, considering that they played with 14 men. But with 14 men, and you thought Dublin would, like, and they were ruthless in one way, like Dublin could kick points in Croke Park with their eyes closed. Like, it's scary to watch up close. But I didn't think they were as ruthless as I thought they would be. Like, goal chances, they kept passing it to each other rather than, you know, just lash it into the net. So it'll be interesting to see how Jim Gavin wasn't thrilled with that. For example, Mick Fitzsimons was largely roasted by Robbie Smith in the first half and was hooked at half time.
Yeah.
So my hot take is that Dublin have gone back by 1-2%, and that's enough for them to be caught by Kerry.
Yeah.
But not caught by Mayo, because my hotter take is that Mayo will get Dublin in the Super 8s, beat them in the Super 8s in this great triumph for Mayo football, and then lose to them in the final.
Right. We'll hold you. Look, he's had two predictions this year. He's been talking about them a lot. They both come true. Donegal did beat down, so they're going to play Fermanagh in the Ulster final, which Gavin suggested before the start of the season. And he thought that Carlow were going to beat Kildare before Carlow had even beaten Louth.
Yeah.
So two good predictions, they come true. He's getting ahead of himself now, and his third one, and he has mentioned it before, he forgot that he actually made three predictions and not two before the start of the season, was Mayo to beat Dublin in the Super 8s and lose them in the final. So we'll hold you to that. Look,
I hope that doesn't happen, because I actually don't think I could take it. I'm not from Mayo, but maybe it's the Catholic in me, but
Morris
I'm really interested.
Galway, and he couldn't take it.
Yeah, but I know it's just, I think it's the Catholic in me that just can't take any more heartbreak from Mayo. It's like you're sacrificing, you're giving up loads of your life for this thing that probably doesn't even exist.
There's a sadist part of me that loves it.
There's a dub part of you that loves it.
It isn't a dub part, it isn't, I swear to God. There's a part of me that like feels so sorry for them on the full-time whistle, and like just thinks, God almighty, would anyone ever have just a bit of sympathy of them and give them their bloody All-Ireland? But at the same time, when it comes to it, I love the idea of them getting to the final and it happening again, because it's the best story in the GAA. It's the best story in Ireland.
Yeah, I know.
Forget about sport even, you know, and it's just, as long as that's remains a story on the day and in the moment, I want them to win, of course I do. But there's definitely a part of me that thinks, Jesus, if this happens every year for 10 years, like, who knows what'll happen?
Yeah.
Mayo could just combust.
As it, yeah.
And just fall off into the Atlantic Ocean.
Just, like, on the Dublin Mayo, say this probably won't make the edit, but anyway, on the Dublin Mayo rivalry, like, it was said about 10 years ago that ultimately, if you got rid of everyone else off Twitter and boiled it down to its essence, it was just two Liverpool fans arguing about Rafael Benitez. 10 years on, it's about a Dublin fan and a Mayo fan arguing about Killian O'Connor. But on the weekend, that Killian O'Connor became the top scorer in the championship ever. Isn't that happened this weekend?
He overcame Trevor Mortimer as the top scorer for in Mayo.
Oh, right.
And he's very, very close.
Okay.
Only 26 years of age.
Okay. So it's going to happen. He is.
He could do it this year.
So he is a top class.
He's 3-9 at the weekend.
There.
Killian O'Connor is one of the greatest forwards we've ever seen. Like, I mean, it's easy to put qualifiers on these things.
Yeah,
but you'll find someone. The fact that Mayo are in the qualifiers most years is probably one of them. But he's a great score taker. Anyway, one of the best scorers we've ever seen. Right. Can we move on? I've been trying to for ages. I've been at as much of fault as you guys. I keep bringing up other things. But we'll talk a bit more about Longford, because we'll talk about round two of the qualifiers. But before, and we'll talk about all the hurling outside of the Lee McCarthy Cup that happened over the weekend. But we do want to talk about first round one of the qualifiers. And poor old London, who will be watching on for the rest of the summer after losing to Louth yesterday.
1927, 1994, there'll be leaps from people all over Ireland, perhaps all over the world, with tears in the eyes, celebrating the return of the college championship. The cup goes to lovely Leitrim.
So London season came to an end in Ruislip yesterday, a 226 to 119 defeat to Louth. Delighted to say Kieran Deely, London manager, is with us now. Kieran, hard luck, first of all. Loud just had a little bit more than you on the day, was it?
Yeah, thanks for that. I suppose they probably showed that they're a Division 2 team yesterday. So they've obviously had a difficult season. And I just said to Pete McGrath afterwards and to some of their players, you know, well done, congratulations, because they came over to Ruislip under a lot of pressure. Obviously, they hadn't won in the league, got beaten by Carlow. But they kind of came up trumps yesterday. And I suppose it became a bit of a shootout. You know, we put on... We put on our forwards at the end, and you know, we left ourselves a little bit open at the back, but you know, they just had better quality of players around the centre of the park, and they really dictated play at different times of the game, and we were in it right up until, you know, probably 10 minutes to go. We were 4 points down after being, you know, coming from, I think, 10 points at one point, and we really rallied, and we didn't get that goal. We didn't get that little bit of luck. You know, Killian Butler hit the crossbar and the post with a shot off the ground. And that would have really brought us right back into it, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, Kieran, 2018, you had a better league. Ultimately, just the two championship games again. Looking back on it now, and I know the defeat is still fresh in your mind, did you take anything more out of this year as opposed to previous years?
I think so. I think if anybody who has watched London closely and anybody who... you know, follows football closely would see that we've improved as a team, and performances have been good in the league. We put it up to every single team. We got a win, a draw, and Leitrim gave us a walkover. And so we finished fourth in the league, which for London, we always finish last. You know, we always finished eighth. So for us, that was a big success. You know, we would have loved to have beaten Waterford on the last day of the league, and we felt like we could have put it up to... We were right in the mix with Laois with 2 points. You know, we lost by 2 points, and Antrim, I think it was 3 points or something like that. So we feel that, you know, there's improvement there. I suppose the real frustration comes then when you come to Championship, and like we all know the story, it's knockout football. You lose, you're into the qualifiers, you lose that, then you're gone. And that's the structure of the Championship. But it's just very, very frustrating from our point of view, because we've got lads now who've committed a lot, like lots of other teams, like Meath and all of them. They've committed a lot. It's coming into the summer. Ruislip looked absolutely amazing yesterday. You know, the pitch was great, and kudos to the London County Board. You know, I'm sometimes not always the best friends with them, and we're trying to push to improve training facilities. But, you know, the pitch is looking amazing, and it's coming into the summer months, and lads are bounding around on top of the ground and loving playing football, and then our season finishes, you know, it's over. And people would say that, okay, well, you know, Kieran, I heard Kieran Whelan said, I don't have access to RTE, to be honest, but somebody said that at some stage on the Sunday game, he said the weaker counties have to help themselves. And you kind of think, well, you know, what else can we do? Like, we're training plenty, we're putting in loads of effort, we're, you know, doing as much as we possibly can on very, very tight budgets with very few people going to our games. And we're, you know, trying to do the absolute best that we can. So I don't know how much more we can help ourselves.
I think just...
But we need more games.
Yeah, we wouldn't be really in the business on this particular podcast of defending the Sunday game too much, but I just, the thing that Whelan, I think, mentioned, it was a conversation about a secondary competition, you know, and he was kind of saying that that generally the attitude among the weaker counties, and it's something we've talked about so much here, is that it's not something that we want, because we want to be in the Connacht Championship for you guys in the qualifiers and everything like that. And maybe it's time to say, you know, so it was a slightly more kind of nuanced chat about, about helping yourself. But I do it kind of brings us on to exactly what can we do, because you mentioned there two games are out this summer. What do we do about this? Because for London, you're there all winter, all the slogging is done, you've got games in Ruislip all through the spring, we've got a couple of games in the summer, and suddenly it's gone. And when GAA is happening, and when the world is paying attention, you guys don't have any games. What can we do to fix this?
I mean, the obvious solution to all of this is a restructuring of the championship. You know, like I think everybody's had their say about what type of format it should be, Champions League, and people are saying, well, the provinces obviously have to stay because of the power of the provincial boards. Unfortunately, that's the case. You know, if we had our way, we'd get rid of all the provinces and make it more a league-based competition, groups-based competition. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Munster Hurling, look at the Leinster Hurling, and say, like, wow, what a competition. You know, you have top-class teams who are playing every weekend, every second weekend against each other. And the fans are loving it, and the supporters and the players, and it's just top quality stuff, you know. So, for like the Super 8 is a brilliant concept and idea for teams at the higher end, but it doesn't do anything for London or for Wicklow or for Leitrim or the rest of us. It's not going to help our development. And basically, what you end up having then is a multiplier effect where teams that get into the Super 8 will end up playing, you know, I don't know, maybe if they get to the final, maybe 8-9 championship games. So they just get better and better and better. And then the likes of London and, you know, Wicklow as well, whoever it is, you get 2 games, you might get 3 games in championship, and you just get left behind. And if you think of, like, the multiplier effect of that also is that people don't want to go down and put in big sponsorship deals with those teams, because they just don't get the publicity around what they're doing. Now, people will say that, okay, that's what happens when you lose games, and if you're lower down the end of the scale, well, that's the way it works. But all that money is feeding into the GAA from tickets and from TV rights and stuff like that. I mean, if they do want the smaller counties, weaker counties, as we're called, to improve, well, then we need extra help.
Mm.
You know, so Padraig Duffy had said last year or the year before that, well, the extra money that comes from the Super 8 will be, you know, dissipated all out through the GAA and help the weaker counties. Well, let's wait and see then where that money is and where that money is going, because I think 2 things have to happen: that the smaller counties need more help, and especially a team like London who are fighting so many different challenges. And the second thing is obviously a restructure of the championship format, because we need more games. The Super 8 would have been fantastic for the teams down at the lower end of the scale, and that'll help us improve.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago, just before I started with Wexford, there was a Leinster little group stage whereby there was Wexford, Longford, Westmeath, I think Carlow. The police are going crazy here around in Enfield. But there was like a little group stage. I think there was 3-4 teams. And it meant that, you know, I remember Wexford, Longford at that stage were down in the doldrums in Leinster, and they got something like 3-4 games. Wexford won that group, and I think they went up to Croke Park and played Dublin then in a Leinster quarterfinal around, I don't know, it was 98 or something like that, 99. So to me, that makes complete sense, complete and utter sense, you know. And you look at Leinster and Munster Hurling, but for some reason, it doesn't make sense then in Croke Park.
Yeah, Kieran, like one of the arguments against a separate championship for the weaker counties is that amateur players will always want the day out in the sun, as it were, and a chance to compete for the same prize as the elite players are. Like, are you sympathetic to that argument in your version of a restructured championship where London get more games of in which they're more competitive? Should players have an opportunity to compete for the big prize, and then should the championships be segregated, or would you foresee segregation straight away and it's up to you to get yourself good enough to compete for the Sam Maguire?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two options there whereby everybody is in the All-Ireland, and when they get knocked out of the All-Ireland, they're into a secondary competition. I think the reason why a lot of managers and players are against that concept is they've been burned before by the Tommy Murphy Cup and some of these things. And it's pretty easy to really push and promote and publicise that competition by having, you know, the final on the same day as the All-Ireland final or on the day before, and, you know, match it up with the big games that are Donegal and Kerry or whatever it is on the Super 8. Also as well, you know, have your All-Stars for the secondary competition, have a trip away. Certainly some games should end up in Croke Park. You know, I think it's a travesty that players will go through their whole career and not get to play in Croke Park. I was very lucky to play a good few times, and it's a fantastic experience. You know, so there's both ways, but I hear the argument about the big day out, and then I think, well, sure, what the hell is a big day out anyway, really? You know, you London now next year have to compete against Galway. So you've got Galway, who came second in Division 1, versus London from Division 4, and you're competing in Championship. And yeah, it's a great day, and you know, people have a bit of fun after the game, and everything like that. You get to test yourself against somebody. But, you know, from the feedback I get from all our players is that they just want more games. You know, it's not about they want the odd big day out against Dublin or Mayo or Galway, that they want more games and competitive games. Like, we want to go into games and know that we at least have a chance to compete and to win. You know, and that's what we're looking at. Because you look at every county competition, I mean, there's senior, there's intermediate, there's junior, and everybody ultimately finds their level. And don't tell me that people and teams don't celebrate when they win an intermediate competition. You know, of course they do.
Mm. It's been 3 years for yourself, Kieran. I don't know if you've decided yet or if you've thought much about it, but do you fancy kind of taking it on and trying to get London to the next level?
I mean, sure, you always think about it, you know, and when you lose, you doubt yourself, and you win, when you win, you think that, yeah, things are going in the right direction. I suppose I would probably think of this now as it's probably come to the end of a natural 3-year cycle. It's now, for the next few years, it's probably somebody to take it on and maybe start from scratch a little bit again, try something different. Now, whether that's myself or somebody else, I don't know yet. You know, I really don't know. I haven't thought that far, but it does feel like it's kind of the end of a little bit of a cycle. But I mean, there's some fantastic London-born players in London, and other young guys as well. You know, we started with 6 yesterday, London-born lads, and there's young lads like Brian Elias, who got a goal and a point yesterday. He's in his first year in Championship, and Killian Butler, and obviously Liam Gavigan, some of those lads. So look, London is in a decent position. It's the biggest thing is that they need to just retain players, because turnover is always an issue. I think this year there's going to be a bit more of a turnover than there's been in the last 2 years. Just there's a couple of lads moving to Dubai, a few lads moving back to Ireland, a few lads coming to retirement age. So I see it as the end of a cycle, and whether I'm part of that or not, I don't know yet.
Okay. Before we let you go, you're obviously a sports scientist. You're involved with QPR, and you had some very interesting takes on the hurling championship on Twitter last week. I was in Thurles yesterday watching Tipperary really like collapse on their feet for the last kind of 10 minutes of that game as Clare got back into it. Wexford, the same thing happened to them on Saturday night against Kilkenny. Offaly were well beaten in the second half of their game against Dublin the week before. The 4 games in a row just doesn't seem to be working out, but you make out that it's more an issue with the structure of training and the way GEA teams go about this than the actual games coming too fast.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably two issues there. It's certainly not probably ideal in current format and the current way that we all approach GAA Championship games, let's say, to have 4 games in a row. I think it's probably best to have like a 2 games in a row with a weekend off, and then on to a 2 games in a row, weekend off, something like that. And that's a problem with the whole structure. And I probably experienced that myself with London this year, whereby it's so much all or nothing in Championship in the GAA that we're so used to that kind of knockout game, all or nothing day, where lads are nearly hiding niggles, they're hiding injuries, they're devastated when they're not brought on, or they're devastated when they're not, you know, included in the matchday squad or something. And I think maybe in time, the more the structure of the championship goes into that more kind of league basis and group format, I think people might change how they approach games. The other problem then is, and I see that because if you look at the soccer clubs and lots of other sports, like, they're competing two games per week, you know, often if they're in Champions League and Premier League, or if they're in Championship where they're playing Tuesday, Saturday, it might be two games a week, every week nearly. I know they're professional teams, but I suppose that leads on to the other point as regards that if you have a lot of games, you know, if it's a very intensive period in your games program, you're going to massively tailor all the training then. And I remember, for instance, Richard Dunn was in QPR for a number of seasons and practically didn't train during the week. You know, he played a match on Saturday and then he's off-field recovery Monday, a little bit of a jog Tuesday, off Wednesday, he trains Thursday, and then he's match prep on Friday, back into the game on Saturday. So I think there's probably a certain amount of structure of training needs to be improved. And alongside that, I mean, you'd like to think that there would be better, more qualified sports scientists and S&C coaches coming on board into the GA, into the teams, because at the moment, you know, there is no auditing of what goes on within teams. Like, anybody, they don't have to have qualifications. In terms of coaching, everybody has to have an award one or an award two coaching, but in terms of sports science and fitness, I mean, there are none. You know, a person can arrive with a whistle and a stopwatch and run lads into the ground. And you just hope that over time that's improved in teams, that's improved in setups. And when you look in Dublin County Board, obviously they have Brian Cullen, you know, as a full-time now high performance manager, and he's working directly with the senior footballers, and then he has a huge input then all the way from senior all the way down to under whatever 14, the youngest team in Dublin. And that really mirrors and replicates what goes on in the professional football clubs, you know, that academies, that there's proper work being going on from under 14s, or well, from under 8s all the way up, but also the FA and the Premier League are coming into those clubs and auditing what they're doing and watching, and they expect certain standards, certain practices being done, and also relevant people with proper qualifications. And I think that's where the GA probably need to step in there and go, well, look, here's our sports science department in Croke Park, and getting out to the counties and saying, well, this is what you need to be doing, and if you're not doing it, well, why aren't you?
Yeah, Kieran, talk to me about a couple of the specifics of what should be expected then of S&C coaches under this kind of putative auditing system that you have in mind.
Yeah, I mean, if you look now, like, for instance, in the last couple of years, GPS has been a massive thing, you know, so training load monitoring and heart rate analysis. And that's a new kind of concept into the GA world. And it's probably been in your Aussie rules and soccer and basketball and stuff a lot longer, you know, over the last, whatever, 6, 7, 8 years. And that's a tool really to be used, you know, to see. That instead, I hear a lot of people commenting in the GA world that, you know, we're checking that the lads who are doing the least amount in training, and it's used as a tool to kind of push them further and to say, well, look, you need to up your distances. And actually, we use it on the flip side, really, in terms of in the QPR, we're looking at the lads who are doing too much, you know, that the lads who are constantly pushing themselves, and they're often the best players. And every little bit of effort that you put in, there's always some cost. There's always some metabolic cost or neuromuscular cost. So at some stage, that player will fatigue or break down or pick up an illness or pick up an injury. And you really, you're using those tools to kind of to act before it's too late in terms of that. So you're monitoring that all the time. And then obviously, in terms of a proper full pre-rehabilitation program, and, you know, there's a lot of teams now doing an awful lot of weights and an awful lot of gym sessions. And you have to question, okay, well, is there, you know, what's the transferability onto the pitch in terms of, are these players starting to break down because they're trying to push themselves to the max in the gym and push themselves on the pitch, and they're probably being pushed in work and stuff like their home life. So something has to give, you know, so we should be able to get to the stage whereby teams can perform a number of weekends in a row, you know, with breaks, obviously. And it just shows the importance of recovery and maybe a little bit more work and training, like on the skills aspect and the tactical setup. Because if you look at football clubs, first team football clubs, they're still spending maybe the first half hour of every training session just on skills, you know, on low tempo skills work, and that's what they're practicing, and on defensive shape and everything like that. And probably in the GA world, we need to think a little bit more of that. At times, we need sessions like that and recovery sessions rather than constant pushing and intensity that we want to replicate then for match situations.
Great stuff, Kieran. Thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations to everything over London. We'll see how it goes. I know that's a decision that clearly needs to be made over the next couple of months. And in the meantime, enjoy the World Cup.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic. It's kind of after creeping up on us all, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So a few free weekends now. Anyway, you can one very, very, very small consolation, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I last year I traveled to Russia last year by train, and I went to like St. Petersburg and Moscow, but also in a lot of other Yekaterinburg and Nizhny Novgorod. And in those cities, there are very, very little English spoken and very few English signs and everything like that. So it'll be really interesting for the fans and supporters just to see how they get on in kind of the more provincial cities.
It'll be
funny to watch.
Kieran, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ed.
Case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Well,
this is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
The decision
that
is
disgraceful.
This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
So, I have to defend Kieran Whelan's honour there.
Yeah, fair play.
I did bring it up on the show a few weeks ago as well, but I kind of felt bad because I felt that Kieran Dealy had been kind of hanging on to that one for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And it was only when he said that he hadn't actually seen it himself that I felt honour-bound to say that it wasn't actually what Kieran Whelan had meant. Yeah.
Come here, while we're defending RTE, and I have written about this, and I probably complained about it on this podcast, they did actually show highlights of Saturday's qualifiers during the live show on Sunday, apparently.
Yeah.
That's
the first time they've done it, though.
But better late than never.
Yeah.
Fair play.
All it does is free up your Sunday. So they played the 7 highlights and then they showed a shorter package during the Sunday game on Sunday evening. So it just frees up time to show the other games, which it seems very obvious, but at least they're listening. Again, we've constantly moaned about the coverage, besides some that we saw way more coverage during those live coverage. We're going to see Joe McDonagh highlights tonight. Wexford, Westmead and Carlow, the highlights of that game is going to be on TG Carr. End of the season, I know, so you're kind of saying why wasn't this done earlier, but at least finally we're going to see. I've been going on about Angus Clark for weeks. He scored another 4 points at the weekend. The winner he scored the week before, I mean, I really hope somebody has footage of that and please share it with us, because it was incredible. He's in our rolling All-Stars at the minute, but the fact that we're going to see Tommy Doyle, Niall O'Brien, who for some reason we've seen more of as a Fitzgibbon hurler than we have as an intercounty hurler, we'll find he scored 6 points the weekend. Again, another hurler you're going to be able to watch tonight. And then obviously this game has relevance because they're going to be in firstly a Joe McDonagh final, but also in a preliminary quarter final later in the year.
Yeah. Against one of them, against Wexford. Whoever loses, I think, or whoever loses that final will play Wexford, and then we don't know who the third team in Munster will be yet. But Carlow Rising, by the way, we didn't mention it earlier. It wasn't all a bad weekend for Carlow. That was a big win. To secure their place in the Joe McDonagh Cup final, and they're doing exactly what they did in the league, which is in the league is like Westmead were leading the way the whole way. Carlow came up and beat them twice
in the final,
and now they could do the same thing again here. They beat them to get into the final and then beat them in the Division 2 final or Division 2A final, and they can do the same again to win the Joe McDonagh Cup. It'd be very interesting because do kind of see Westmead as this sort of out on their own, but they're not, like, and Carlow have beaten them 3 times now, like.
And I mean, Westmeath were already qualified at the weekend, but they're definitely conscious of the fact that Carlow might have a hoodoo of them, because those three players I mentioned all started at the weekend. It wasn't a rested Westmeath squad.
To us last week as well, that, like, you know, he'd have more respect for the competition, and fair play to him, I believe that, but I also think that they didn't want Carlow in there, you know. It's like they would have rather have Kerry, like, and so Kerry did finish third actually in the end, so that's like pretty successful.
As it happened anyway, like, I mean, once Kerry won that, Carlow were guaranteed, because Carlow had them in the head-to-head.
Right, okay. Yeah. So even before that game, Carlow were already through.
Yeah,
all
but
right,
Kerry,
okay.
Kerry guys, it was a pretty comfortable win over, Andrew.
Yeah, It's a very good season for Kerry, actually, you know, and we're talking about the Munster thing. It was always a little bit hypothetical because it didn't seem like it was possible to Kerry to win. Kerry aren't that far off, you know, so we'll see them then next year. Poor old Meath will be gone, and we don't know. Look, we can talk about relegation and all that in that all we want, but the fact is we kind of all think that they'll change it. And
do we? Well, for Offaly?
Well, no, for the five team.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
I do think
sorry.
You know, I think there's a the general acceptance out there that that's a mistake, and I don't know why they wouldn't just adapt to it, you know?
Because six teams in the John McDonagh Cup, when we are the one major complaint about this brilliant Munster Championship is the fact that there's five teams, and therefore the gaps aren't fair. So some teams are playing 4 weeks in a row, other teams are getting gaps. The great thing about having six teams is that you can actually account for that. So you can give every team fair gaps, or just play all the games straight off, and then there's no. But at least it's balanced. Everybody's playing the same. So six teams in. I mean, Liam Sheedy has said this as well. It works for the John McDonagh Cup, and the main reason it works is because it was an immensely competitive competition. There wasn't any gap between these six teams. Like Meath were unlucky to get relegated. Antrim, who we talked about a lot earlier in the year, are now going to be in a relegation playoff because they finished second last. Like, it was a really competitive.
I think prior to the most recent weekend of action, the John McDonagh Cup, I think only 4 of the 12 games or 3 of the 12 games were decided by more than 4 points.
Yeah,
I think all of them did involve me. Like, I mean, and it's normal for a competition to have one team that's probably just a step below, you know, so. Yeah.
The Tipperaries of the world.
like Kerry were 2 points off.
It still feels good, I have to say. Sorry to Tip fans, but feck it, we never beat them, so.
but Kerry were 2 points off a John McDonagh Cup final. Meade, who were relegated, would have beaten Kerry if they didn't get a man sent off.
That's true, that was
left.
The one game.
The gap between these teams is so minuscule. Surely you preserve a competition.
What a competition, and I can't wait for next year when everybody sees sense, and it's the 3 o'clock, starts off our championship weekend, 3 o'clock, live on TG Car Saturday afternoon before the Sky game started the evening. It's going to be brilliant. That's what's definitely going to happen, because if one thing that happens, it's adapting to common sense. That's what the GA always
I
does.
I still think that they should make RTE show it, in the sense that RTE to show the World Cup have to show Haiti against Nigeria in the Confederations Cup. They should be showing the Joe McDonagh Cup and the Nicky Racker.
I love when they show Haiti against Nigeria because they have great chats. Like, it was about, remember the time that Kenny Cunningham and Richard Shadley had an argument about Tahiti's professionalism.
Top five TV moment of all time.
If they didn't have to show that game, we wouldn't have seen that argument. Yeah. Anyway, we've gone kind of off the wall a little bit.
Imagine
Morris.
What crack Loughnane would have with like Warwickshire.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Jesus, a segue and a half there, Gavin, because I was just about to ask Morris about Christy Ring, Laurie Marr, Nicky Rackard. We know the finals, and all three of them will feature a team from the UK. So here's my suggestion: Wembley triple header.
Oh wow!
Okay, Ruislip.
maybe do Fortress Ruislip.
It is kind of remarkable. Like Warwickshire, who are now in a final, didn't lose a game this year. They finished top of 3A and now have won all their group games. Lancashire have only lost one game against Sligo, who they're going to play in the final. If London, who only won one game in their league, are now in a final of the Christy Ring. Like, there's
they won the one that mattered in the league though, against Kildare. Like, so that's the kind of level that they're at here. You
know, they play now. Yeah. So they shocked Wicklow at the weekend. So they play Kildare in the Christy Ring final. And again, all these games are relevant because we know the winner of that is going to play in a playoff against Antrim. Yeah. So like, we could see it is foreseeable that London will win an All Ireland within a year. So what they have to do is win the Christy Ring final, then beat Antrim, win the John McDonagh next year, win their Premier League quarter final, and then get to an All Ireland final. So within a year, London could win an All Ireland final.
I mean, that's optimistic. I did see a headline in the Irish, and I didn't read the article, but I did see a headline in the Irish Independent that there's three Brits playing hurling in a field. So I didn't actually click into it. I didn't know what it meant, but it must be in reference to these
teams doing really well.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing to do with
anything. Good on the Irish Independent for covering those teams.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
Right, Gavin.
Oh, Fortress Jewel Park, Ockham, by the way.
Is
Jewel, J-O-U-L-E, like a jewel, like a
Paul Jewel.
No, that's J-E-W-E-L-L. Yeah. This is like a unit of energy.
All right, okay, yeah. So, I've never known Wicklow to win a game at Fortress Ockham, so hopefully Fortress Jewel Park will become somewhat more of an actual fortress.
Hopefully, it'll just become part of the culture, like Dr. Netwatch Cullen.
Wicklow were beaten by Cavan at the weekend, as we mentioned. Mark's off celebrating that famous win.
Yeah.
So they're not involved in this morning's round two football qualifier draw. Longford are.
Longford
lost to Dublin.
This is going to be spicy. Longford home to Kildare.
Yeah.
More Division 1 opposition.
I would have loved Longford versus Cavan. That would have been great. It would have been really, really set up this pot.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. So.
I prefer to take out Kildare early, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Kildare,
by the way, we didn't mention. Kildare finally got off their holes.
Hold
my hands Derry. Really good win. And we all know why.
Oh.
Green jerseys. Think of a match that Kildare have won in the last 8 years. Every single one of them has, one, been in the qualifiers, and two, wearing the green jerseys.
They beat Meath
on a Saturday night.
Yeah, they beat Meath last year.
No, I don't
on
remember.
A Saturday
I
night in white. Yeah, no, but no, I'll buy it. Like, I mean, I don't know enough about Kildare's jerseys to...
Well, the green jersey is, I feel like it's a good look charm for them.
But it's rotten.
Ah, it's
I
nice.
Don't know about that.
Oh, no, it's the point. Anyway, they'll be wearing white against Longford, so hard luck.
The Lily there. Greens.
Elsewhere, probably tie of the round, is a repeat of the 2016 All-Ireland Football Semi-Final between Tipperary and Mayo and Thurles. That game will probably have more Mayo fans out than Tip fans, won't it?
Definitely.
The Tip fans, normally what might happen with the footballers is that there's a kind of a rising tide lifting all boats sort of thing with the, but I'd say when the hurlers fans are getting all depressed and gone home, I don't know if it's like, well, at least we have the footballers. I don't think they'll feel that way unless they go on a run.
Tipperary footballers and Waterford footballers still being in it while their hurlers aren't is pretty remarkable.
On the Waterford footballers, they've got Monaghan, presumably in Fraher Field,
presumably some kind of nod to the many ladies football finals that these two teams played in the
week.
90s. Yeah,
Cavan against Down in a kind of a standard enough Ulster Championship game.
It's a very disappointing draw,
and it really is, isn't it? Carlow got Tyrone.
Yeah,
that game could actually be the first 0-0 draw we've seen in a long time. Rejuvenated Offaly under Paul Rouse there at home to Clare. You worried about that? That's a cracking tie.
No, I wouldn't. I would be worried about it given Clare's performance against Kerry, but I think it's a good draw. You know, like
for Clare.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but I mean, considering who they could have got, I think it's actually a good draw for Clare. But it's definitely not easy. You know, I would have preferred a game in Ennis.
And Sligo Armagh is the only one I hadn't mentioned.
Sligo Armagh, one of the my favourite ever games of football, the All-Ireland quarter-final in 2002 when Armagh went on to win the All-Ireland, and Sligo very nearly bet them in Croke Park.
No, I don't remember that.
That was brilliant. That was as good a Sligo team as we'll ever get. Don't think that's going to be as interesting this time. Such a shit draw. Like, Tip and Mayo is the best game by a mile, and it's not that good. I won't be like rushing home to see it, like if it doesn't suit me that night, you know.
Yeah, Tim getting battered by Cork kind of took the sting out of that game, unfortunately. Yeah,
is there an argument that it should have been an open draw again?
Yeah,
I completely agree.
I was thinking exactly that when he was going through the score,
because it was
there.
Like, just to clarify, it was the round one winners were in one pod and the beaten teams were
exactly,
in the other.
Yeah,
and it was an open draw in round one.
Yeah,
and there was everyone was super excited because, oh God, Tyrone could get Mayo. But no,
Tyrone could have got Mayo again.
Exactly. They could have stuck it together, but to put them all together. But alas, it's not the case.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty much all we have time for, except for, up next, our famous weekend accumulator.
I would love it if Cork beat them. Yeah. Also, can we talk about the fact that when I was walking out to Dad, one of them turned to the other one. Ashford, it's great to be back in Division 1.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that.
Let Cork beat them and then Cavan and Tipperary go on.
But I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title.
And I'll tell you now, they're still fighting for this title. And they've got to go Cork and get something.
And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something.
I think they're at home against Cork.
We just say things like that.
Home against Cork there.
And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I would love it if Cork beat them.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Okay, so we don't really have an accumulator because there's only three games on this week. We've finally run out. We're running out of so-called
famous,
weekend
counties.
Famous,
by the way, is a generous phrase for a complete failure.
Yeah, we've won one in 17 weeks, and that one wasn't even a full win. I mean, there was a spread draw in it, which meant that we got kind of three wins instead of four.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, look, I mean, it is what it is. Maybe infamous is probably a better word than famous, but here we are. Only three games on this weekend. We're running out of so-called weaker counties, Gavin. What are we going to do?
I don't know. We might have to to re. Well, I mean, it's not like we didn't see this coming.
We've no Christy Ring Cup. We've no Laurie Marr Cup. We've no Nicky Rackard. We've no Joe McDonough. We've no and no qualifiers.
Yeah.
Even.
So yeah, well, this weekend is. I feel that this weekend is a nod to the fact that the World Cup's starting this weekend. To be honest, imagine there's 18 games this weekend, and only 3 this weekend.
Yeah. Well, I'm in Ennis on Sunday. And it's already sold out. I bought tickets about 3 weeks ago because I heard that Limerick were on a ticket run. I seen it on Twitter. There's a lot of Limerick people go, get your fucking tickets for this quick. And I was like, you bastards. It's like, it's our game.
What are the permutations now? This is a de facto semi-final.
It's a de facto semi-final,
so
yeah.
So Cork already qualified?
Cork have 4 points. So Cork could lose to Waterford, which, you know, if everybody, like, Clare have to win. If Cork lose to Waterford, a draw would have both Limerick and Clare through. But there's been a lot of draws, so you can't rule it out.
Yeah,
they're all
at the same time. Maybe they'll be. I wonder, could you arrange like a little bit like Holland and Ireland did in 1990?
Yeah.
Could you arrange a draw on hurling? Would it be too hard?
Yeah, it might
It'd be pretty obvious.
It might be difficult. And also, the problem with it is Holland didn't have to play Ireland in the next match. Because of that, which would have kind of, you know, it's like it's a bit disrespectful to each other to say we'd rather play you again than play Cork, you know. So I don't think that's going to happen. But so we have Samaras. We've been letting you look up the odds while me and Gavin have been killing time here. Limerick, Clare, Waterford, Cork, and Galway, Roscommon in the Connacht football final is all we have to show for. This is where we finally start winning money because the choice is coming out of it and we just have to make some bold picks.
Really hard to pick this week when you've only got 3 games, none of them featuring a so-called weaker county. But in the interest of participating, I picked Cork half-time, Cork full-time at 4-11. Waterford, nothing to play for. Cork have a Munster final to play for there.
Yeah.
Limerick, Clare. I've gone for Limerick -1.
I always said he was an arsehole, didn't I?
Yeah, come full circle.
The prime reason that I went for that is just to irritate Mick, but also the fact that
Limerick worked.
Yeah, and Limerick have now started reintroducing the Napiercy players. So Shane Dowling came back last week and hit 15 points. Mike Casey as well.
Limerick are so good. I'm just blown away by
them. Incredible squad. Yeah. So I'm going to say Limerick -1. And the other one
if you're gambling on that, I would just say Ennis is a very, very, very good home ground for Clare. But in my opinion, anecdotally, but I still said it wrong, but also statistically, one of the best home advantages in the country.
The final one I'm going for is the Connacht final, which will be in the Hyde, and that's Roscommon half-time, Galway full-time. So the reason I'm going for that is Roscommon at home, in incredible form, had a great league, but Galway have an unbelievable bench. Like the players that they can choose, the fact they could bring on. I mean, last week they didn't start Kieran Duggan, who was our man of match against Mayo. He'll probably come back in. He'll probably back in Conroy, which means Flynn is also on the bench. Kelly came off the bench and then scored a goal last week. He's definitely pushed to come back. Mike Daly, who's huge for Galway, he's back fit now. Ian Burke, the Carfin forward, started last week. The amount of some of these players, they can't fit them all in. Eamon Brannigan, the half forward, he has to start. So it means that their bench is going to be incredible. So I think Roscommon will start well, probably be up at halftime, but Galway's bench to win it out from, so Galway to win there.
Yeah. So you've got Cork to beat Waterford halftime, full-time.
Yeah.
Limerick -1 in Ennis against Clare. Roscommon half-time, Galway full-time in the Connacht final. Yeah. What's the price?
The price is 13.32-1. That Roscommon Galway is 4-1, by the way.
I'll tell you what then, right? You had 3 games to choose from and you've come up with a 13-1. If that wins, you're in charge of the accumulator every week from now on.
Every week, yeah.
Right? I'm setting that down now, right?
I mean, Roscommon, can we briefly mention the fact that Kevin McStay has already named his team for the Connacht final?
I think he named it
on Saturday or Sunday. No man more eager to get a teammate than Kevin McStay.
Yeah.
He'll probably name his team for the next round as soon as the full-time whistle goes.
I was at a match last year when the Connacht final was on. I was at a hurling match and that score was announced over Tannoy. And I have to say, I've rarely been as shocked, not even just that Roscommon won, but by the scoreline.
They won by 8 or 9
and
points.
And I think that we're quickly dismissing them this year. You know? They have, but like they hammered them.
Yeah, I don't... But I think that's nearly more reason to look at Galway. Like, Galway have lost to Roscommon 2 years now.
Yeah.
And I definitely think this is a team that is gunning for a kind of title and just get straight into the Super Race, get it done. Again, going back to their squad. So I still would favour Galway for that game. It's also worth mentioning, Kevin McStay, we constantly bemoan the fact that the jokes that are played with naming teams, that swapping teams. Kevin McStay stood up, named his team early, and the top reply to him naming the team was, why aren't the subs listed? You can't win.
Claire named team yesterday and changed the numbers, which I was surprised at, and then played that way. Played it, like, at least for, like, they obviously made changes during the game, but everyone was in their position.
Dub started per the program against Longford. I've never felt so disrespected in my life.
There was a change, actually. I promise I will stop talking then. What game was it? But Kilkenny made three changes, and it wasn't even announced on the tannoy.
Yeah.
The people didn't even know about it. Richie Hogan wasn't meant to start. It was that late that it was like they announced the teams will play as selected, and then they just didn't. When are we going to start charging them substitutions for that? Like,
on that
surely
point,
there has to be a deadline.
On that point, there was a possibility. Donegal were very close to being charged a substitution for what they did with Neil McGee at the weekend for the Down game. And the referee actually came over and, after debating with both managers, eventually decided he wasn't going to take a sub. But he was really close to saying, you're losing a sub for what you did there, because they announced it so late.
Yeah.
So I think we're moving towards that direction.
Good. Good, because there's literally no need for it. It's pointless and it's unfair on the fans, and nobody cares but the journalists.
And the journalists.
You know, but it is unfair on fans because you don't have a clue what's going on. You have to buy the program, and everybody, like, you know, you can do what we did, like, just learn off the teams, and and if they say number 23 is coming on and it's so-and-so, then you remember who it is. But if they don't announce it at all, then you're screwed. You're just kind of shouting, well done, that man. You seem like an Egypt. Nobody wants to do that, you know. Anyway, it's been an epic show. Probably our longest yet.
Yeah.
I have to blame Morris.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, there's 18 games, you know.
There's
a lot. I mean, touched on what we're going to do next week.
With six
powerhouses of Gaelic games.
We're out a day early. This is the earliest we've watched you do the podcast this week. Much like Kevin McStay, I would suggest that, Gavin, you be grateful for what you have and stop asking us about next week too soon. We've put in all the work already this year. Give us an hour off before we start worrying about next week. Morris, thanks for stepping in.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you'll be in for the accumulators every week after the powerhouse that I'm predicting, except for the Limerick minus one. That's going to go arseways. But anyway. Gav, thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Tickets, pack the sandwiches, read all the critics, know the stats, know the averages. Big delays, they were warning, so we had a spuds at 8:30 this morning. For John Dahl, Mickey and Pat Fox, they spurred on our hurling crops. Like Paul Kern, Mickey Cal, John O'Keefe, the big number 6, Conor O'Mahony. His hurley, he got the priest to bless it. The way that he pulls, he should be arrested. Ball to Benny Dunn, bang, you're dead. The hay was saved and Cork were bet. 1997, I was in Croke Park, James E. O'Connor nearly broke me heart. They said to us, the banner is back. Tyrone Kelly stuck a ball in the onion sack. Paul Corn like a bear on the edge of the square. They're having nightmares of Polly Maher and Clare. Is it a bird? A plane? Is it a man? On you by Seamus Callanan. Tide is turning, now you're learning. This is Tip for Rory Hurley. T-I-P-P-E-R-A-R-Y. T-I-P-P-E-R-A-R-Y. Now you're hurling. T-I-P-P-E-R-A-R-Y. 25 of us packed onto a bus. Met a few lads from Holy Cross. On the banks of the Lee, the sun was shining. She always is for the Munster final. Children on laps, out fellas wearing caps. Tay and Hank sang a jazz, and you can't beat that. Noel McGrath, he's pure gifted. And he looks like the Milky Bar Kid. Coming striving balls like out of a cannon. Shane McGrath, and he rising like a salmon. Heart of a lion, they call him Rocky. He had us celebrating in horse and jockey. From Paddy the Saint to Garrod Ryan to the magical hands of John O'Brien. Lightning loud, he could hurl in the dark, taking your defence on a tour of Croke Park. Tide is turning, now you're learning. This is Tip for Rory Hurley. T-I-P-P-E-R-A-R-Y. T-I-P-P-E-R-A-R-Y. Now you're hurling. T-I-P-P-E-R-A-R-Y. It's Brallum, Tipperdorn, hurling in the hand first thing in the morn. First thing in the morn.
That's how hurling men are born.
Johnson. Substitution on the Tipperary team. Number 13, Owen Kelly. Being replaced by number 47, Johnny B.
Hello, Arabelle, Ballina, Ballingarry, Kira, Kappa, Y, Carrick, Davins, Clannakinney. Drummond, Inch, Aero, Feather, Feather, Sheaves, J.K. Brackens, Killin' All, and Galty Rovers. Lockmore, Lara, Port, Rowan, Latin, Newport, Basque, Grey, Holy Cross, Ballycahal. We're with ye every inch, from Ballylubie to Ballyhatch. Yeah.